is within everything, and yet he is outside of everything.
Okay. So, now Srila Prabhupada quotes Jiva, paraphrases Jiva Goswami in the first paragraph of the purport, where he says that the Supreme, by definition, must be inconceivable. Because he has to be greater than our intelligence. If he is not greater than our intelligence, then he is not supreme, our intelligence becomes supreme. So therefore, by definition, he is inconceivable. And he talks about how Hare Krishna. How the absolute truth is far yet near. So he gives multiple examples. One is that for the devotees, the Lord is very close. For the non-devotees, is very far. Similarly, the Lord, as Bhagavan in the spiritual world, is very far away. As the deity, is very close to us. As Srila Prabhupada gives multiple examples. So in the first class, we talked about science of deity worship. So that is all elaborately what we discussed in the morning. It is related to that. So in that sense, it was not a diversion. So, just a few more subtleties of deity worship. I'll discuss that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Jaiva Dharma analyzes quite a bit, and he explains that the deity, some people may see the deity as stone. So some people, he says, those who are the grossest level of consciousness, says they see the deity just as an idol, a stone image that is lifeless, and somehow foolish people are thinking of that to be God. So this is the level of understanding of the most followers of Abrahamic religion. Now beyond that, some people may not be able to accept the point that this, how can this deity be God? You know, God is all powerful. And from the material point of view, the deity has no, it is just a stone, it doesn't have any power. Deity can't clean himself, deity can't dress himself, somebody else has to done all that for them. So how can the deity be God? So, these people may treat the deity as a, he uses the word, Sanskrit word, nidarshan. Nidarshan means an indicator, a pointer, a reminder. That this is a way for us to direct ourselves towards God. And beyond that, he says that the pure devotees, the advanced devotees, they say that the deity is a non-different manifestation of God. So, this level is not offensive. This level is offensive. Consider the deity just to be matter is offensive. But if somebody is considering the deity, the deity helps me to remember Krishna. I don't consider the deity as non-different from Krishna. That is not wrong. But that is not the highest understanding. So, somebody may say, so he used the example that some level that some people may see a photo of my friend. And that photo reminds me of that person. Similarly, it reminds me of Krishna. This is reasonable as far as it goes, but the difference is that the photo is not that person, whereas the deity is Krishna. So, there's a difference. But this level is okay as far as it goes. And most people, if they start from this level, gradually by purification they will move to the higher level. So why they are at this level? Because ye athamam prapadyante. They don't have the bhakti right now. Because they don't have the bhakti. So for all of us also, you know, we theoretically or philosophically accept that deity is not different from Krishna. But still, we have not yet realized it. So, at the very least is that, even if we don't, in a practical sense, realize deity is not different from Krishna, we know that going in front of the deity enhances our Krishna consciousness. We remember Krishna, we pray to Krishna, we subordinate ourselves to Krishna. So in that sense, at a functional level, we may be accepting this theoretically, but we function often at this level, which is not wrong. As long as we don't deny or deride this level. Deny means say this is false, and deride means say this is foolish. So, as long as we don't do that, then it is not wrong. Now, within this, there are that when some people treat Bhaktivinoda Thakur as a systematic theologian, very, very systematic. So he says, this idea of God, of the deity being a reminder of God or a pointer to God, can happen at two ways, at two levels. And what he talks, he doesn't use this specific terminology, but we can use this terminology. Now whatever I am speaking, this is elaborately given in my book on idol worship or ideal worship. I'll just mention it briefly. So there is two kinds of symbolism, ascending and descending. Symbol means, a symbol is that which something that represents, symbolizes something else. So ascending symbolism means that if I consider the example of a flag. Now, India's flag is a tricolor. So now, if the Indian legislature, Indian parliament meets and says that India has progressed now, we don't have to, agriculture is not contributing much to the economy of India. So therefore, we don't need that green patch in the Indian flag. Instead of tricolor, we want to make it a bicolor. Is it possible? Yes, isn't it? It is possible because if we look at the concept of nationhood, other mic please. We look at the concept of nationhood and the object flag. Their link is only conceptual. There is no actual link between the object flag and the concept of Indian nationhood. The link is only conceptual. It's only in our mind that the link is there. So India as a nation existed before also. And there were people who considered themselves Indians. They had the concept of nationhood even when India had not made the tricolor flag. And in the future, the concept of nationhood may continue to exist even when the tricolor flag changes to a bicolor or whatever. So, this is the Mayavadi way of worshipping deities. Because Mayavadis say that there is a Brahman that is abstract, that is formless. But because you can't think of the formless, so you ascribe a form to that Brahman. And that is why they say you can ascribe any form that you want. You can have your Ishtadeva, whichever you want. You can worship Shiva, the Guru will tell you, you can worship Shiva, you can worship Durga, you can worship Krishna, you can worship me also. Because I am also Brahman. Why? Because once I have realized, because their idea is what? If you remember, that when Brahman comes in contact with the mode of goodness, that is Ishvara. So he said that actually I have realized that I am Brahman. So actually, Ishvara is an illusion in one sense. You have to transcend it. So I can also be a tool for you to transcend that illusion. So the point is, the Mayavadi idea of how they worship deities, I told this incident earlier also. Jayapataka Maharaj went to, when he was in Puri, at that time, Prabhupada told, now that they should allow our temple, our ISKCON devotees to visit the Puri temple. So Jayapataka Maharaj went and met the Puri management and Prabhupada was there on the planet. So they said, you go and talk with the Shankaracharya of the Govardhan Mutt. There is a mutt of Govardhan, one of the four pithas, then Puri. So when he went there, he was waiting to meet the Shankaracharya and he saw there are beautiful Radha Krishna deities to be worshipped. And they were being worshipped also quite nicely. The Shankaracharya came to meet him. And then as they started talking, he asked, so Shankaracharya said, yes, all of you are doing is very good. Continue doing this. In your next lifetime, you will be born as a Hindu. Then you can have darshan of Jagannath. So he said no. But then Maharaj asked him, see, you are following Shankara's Advaita path. Then how come you are worshipping Radha Krishna deities? So Shankaracharya said, who is worshipping Radha Krishna? I am worshipping myself. Sangropasana. That is Brahman, I am Brahman. So this is their understanding of deity worship. The idea is that the deity is a symbol that has to be transcended ultimately, but the symbol is a tool. It's a tool, and whichever tool catches your fancy, you can use that tool. Just as Indians can use any flag that they want to connect with their nation. Because actually the concept of nationhood and the flag has no intrinsic connection. The connection is only in our imagination or our conception, our mind. So this is a Mayavadi and an incorrect idea of the connection between deity and Krishna. Now what is descending symbolism? So, if you want to have an example of descending symbolism, a man and his photo. A man and his photo. You know, a person and his photo. If a husband comes back from his office and then he opens his wallet and his wife sees that in the morning there was her photo in his wallet, but now there is some other woman's photo over there. Hey, what happened? What is this? He says, No, I am thinking of you only, but I just changed the photo. She will say, I will change my husband. That means, if we see, there is an intrinsic connection between the photo and the person. The photo represents the way the person is. The photo and the person is not that they are not different. There is a significant difference. But still, when we are representing a person through a photo, there is one way you can represent and there are many ways in which we can't represent. Isn't it? So, what is the fundamental difference between nationhood and a person? It is that nationhood is an abstract, amorphous concept on which we are imposing a form. But in the case of a person, that person has his original form. And that has what has to be depicted in the photo. So, the Vaishnava understanding of deity is descending symbolism. Descending symbolism means that there is Krishna who has his original form. So in this, there is this very powerful conversation of Bhaktivinoda Thakur with this Muslim mullah. Jaiva Dharma is a novel. So in that, it is depicted that a mullah comes and meets a Vaishnava saint. And he says, you know, why do you depict God in matter, in stone? You know, God does not have any material form. You should not depict God in matter. It is better to just think of God. So the first reply that this, who is this person? Vijay Krishna Goswami or whoever. He's a character through whom? maybe that is not the name, I forget the name now. But maybe there is a reason why that name came from my mouth. Whatever it is. So the thing is, he replies very nicely. He says, but even the thought is material. You say don't depict God as a deity. Just think about him in the mind. But even the thought is material. Because as long as we are in the conditioned stage of consciousness, we cannot think without the material mind. So he says that as long as you are in the material realm, you cannot avoid material representation of God. So therefore, even the thought is material, so you can't avoid material representation. Then if you depict as a deity, it helps you to remember better. Because not everybody can think of God all the time. But if there is a deity, there is a focus. So, the point is that when we talk about descending symbolism, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, how does it work? He says that deity is not depicted. Deity is not a product of an artist's artistry, nor is it a product of a poet's imagination. It is an expression of a saint's revelation. The three different things. Very important. Yeah, this point is clear about ascending and descending symbolism? Yeah. So, there is actual connection between, good, you asked this question, there is actual connection with the person and the photo in the sense that the person has a particular form and the photo depicts that form. Okay? So now, at the gross material level, at the subtle material level, and at the spiritual level. So, what he is saying is, the deity is not a product of the sculptor's artistry. The deity is not a product of a poet's imagination. No.
Then what is it?
It is a saint's revelation.
What does that mean?
That means that there are great saints who have actually seen Krishna. Either they have seen Krishna externally or they have seen Krishna internally within their hearts. And that revelation of the saints is later on expressed through words, and that comes as the scriptural descriptions of God. And then those words are either depicted by a poet. I mean, the second, when it comes to the poets, the origin is here. And from here, it may come here. That is, then the saint might be a poet, or the saint might give this to a poet, and the poet may describe it very poetically, very beautifully. And then, from there, an artist, a sculptor may depict that deity also. So the origin is spiritual. And naturally, when that spiritual origin is expressed through material words, so he goes on and further says, this very interesting point, if God is not to be represented in matter, then you cannot even have scriptures. Because ultimately scriptures are also representation in matter. Isn't it? Even if we say that the scriptures are the word of God, and so they are transcendental, but when they are written down, they are written down on matter, using material tools. So doesn't that become a blasphemy of God if any representation of God is a blasphemy? So, that's why we cannot avoid material representation in any way, in this material realm. We have to have some sort of material representation. Then, it is that material representation which helps us to remember God and to develop our affection for God, that is the best. So the deity helps in a very powerful way. So, so you remember those two levels were there. We may see the deity as a reminder or a pointer, but as we advance more and more, then we will see that Krishna is non-different from the deity. Now, at the same time, when we talk about the non-difference, there is something very significant to know. There is, just like when the deity is made, and then there is prana pratishtha, and then there is netron, you know, open the eyes. And then after that, the deity gives darshan to everyone, people take darshan of the deity also. So that means, now the question arises, that when the deity was not yet fashioned, the material that was used to fashion the deity, it was a stone. So was it deity at that time? Or was it that after prana pratishtha it became a deity? And if somebody desecrates the deities, then has he desecrated Krishna? So see, here it's very important to understand that non-difference is at two levels. Non-difference is in one sense, when we do prana pratishtha, Krishna manifests as the deity. So from the time of prana pratishtha, Krishna and the deity are non-different. But at the same time, even when prana pratishtha is done, that non-difference may not be perceived by everyone. So like you have this Ganesh Utsav, where they have something called as Arohan and Visarjan. So Arohan means what? They invite the deity or the Lord to come, the particular devata or whoever, to come and reside in the deity. And then Visarjan, now many people don't do the Visarjan. They think Visarjan just means putting the deity in water. But actually, before doing the Visarjan, there has to be prayers. Oh Lord, thank you for coming and manifesting as the deity. And thank you for accepting our worship. And now I have finished worshipping you. Now you can kindly take leave. So then the devata is supposed to depart. And then you do Visarjan of the form. So, in fact, there is now, within the Gaudiya tradition, it is not so much done. But within the Vaishnava tradition, there is also something called a Kshanik Linga. Kshanik Linga means what? Like we have this example of who was that? Ghanshyam Baba. He used to make underground the letters of Radharani's name. And then he would worship them and then he would gently wipe them away. So that is, at one level, he's not making a deity, but he's worshipping. So Kshanik Linga is what? That some person who wants to worship. Like if you see in the Mahabharata, when Arjuna is meditating up there, and then this some animal comes charging along, and then some hunter comes chasing, and the hunter also attacks, and Arjuna also attacks. That hunter is actually Lord Shiva. And then there is the both say that I have shot first. And then they start fighting with each other. And Arjuna is shooting, and all the weapons are just going inside the hunter, nothing is happening. And actually Arjuna has been doing tapasya to invoke the pleasure of Lord Shiva over there. And then suddenly Arjuna gets a thought. How is it that all my weapons are going inside Lord Shiva like that? And inside this hunter. So is it Lord Shiva? So he wants to test. So what does he do? He just takes some mud and shapes the mud as a shivling. And he offers flower on that. And as soon as he offers flowers on that, he finds that the flower is falling on that hunter. And then he understands, oh, this is Lord Shiva. Then he offers obeisances to him. Lord Shiva says, you have pleased me. By your tapasya as well as by your expertise in fighting. I wanted to see how expert you were. So the point here is that this is also an example of Kshanik Linga. There is no prana pratishthana over there. So ultimately, you know, Krishna cannot be invoked merely by prana pratishtha. It is bhakti that invokes him. If the prana pratishtha is done without bhakti, Krishna is not bound to be present over there. So sometimes in our voices, in our temples, we may have images of Krishna. There is one conversation. I had asked this to Janandivas Prabhu. I told the Prabhupada said in one conversation that if at a particular place Krishna is worshipped for a long time, then even if no prana pratishtha is done, he says archana for a long period of time, that itself serves as a prana pratishtha. If for a long time you keep worshipping. So we shouldn't think that prana pratishtha is some like magic that transforms matter into spirit. The only magic is bhakti. It is bhakti that invokes Krishna's presence. But because we want to have, because the scriptures also want to have standards, so therefore, they also talk about functions. So prana pratishtha is a very important function whose importance should not be minimized. But essentially, what invokes Krishna's presence is bhakti. So, sometimes somebody may be worshipping a particular form for which prana pratishtha may not be done. But if that person is worshipping sincerely and the form is made according to scriptural description, then nothing can stop Krishna from manifesting. Now we don't have to say that Krishna has manifested over there, nor do we have to say that Krishna has not manifested over there. Krishna can receive somebody's bhakti from anywhere. So in that sense, Krishna can manifest. Especially if the form is made according to scriptural description, then bhakti is what invokes Krishna's presence. So the point is, even if prana pratishtha is done, if there is no bhakti, there are people who may come and they will still see the deity as stone. They will still see the deity as stone and not as Krishna. So, it is not that prana pratishtha suddenly makes everybody see that this is Krishna. What will make people see is bhakti itself. So, prana pratishtha is more of our commitment to standards of service. So, by yethama prapadyante, when we commit ourselves to more service, Krishna manifests himself more to us. So prana pratishtha is an expression of our commitment to high standards of service. I want to make two more points. So all this discussion I am going on is, we are talking about these three, Vidarshan and non-difference. Indicator or non-difference. When I was talking about all that, the point I made is that as sadhakas, we may see the deity as the indicator or the pointer. But as long as we are not deriding or denying Krishna non-difference, it's not wrong. So, sometimes if somebody desecrates the deity, Krishna cannot be desecrated. Krishna can withdraw his presence from the deity. Just as Krishna can manifest his presence as the deity, Krishna can withdraw his presence as the deity. So, just as I was giving the example of Arohan, and Tirobhav, or we can use call it Visarjan. The different words are used. And I gave the example of Kshanik Linga also. So the point is that Krishna can manifest, Krishna can unmanifest. generally speaking now, wherever there are temples, then they call it that there is no arohana and visarjan. It's sthayi vigraha. Lord has come there to reside. And there is no visarjan for the Lord in that sense. So that's how we worship within ISKCON primarily. That's what Srila Prabhupada taught. And within the Vaishnava tradition, there is this Kshanikalinga is also there. And there is also the concept of visarjan. You can have the deity and you can do visarjan. But within the Vaishnava tradition, that is not done much. That is not wrong. It is bona fide. But it is not done much. And as devotees, Krishna, we understand that Krishna is non-different. Krishna and the deity are non-different. At the same time, Sanatan Goswami writes in his commentary to the Amodarashtakam, he's written a commentary. So he says that actually, although the deity is not different from Krishna, still the devotee wants to see Krishna as Krishna. That longing is there. Why? He says, because the deity is not different from Krishna. So in that sense, the devotee is seeing Krishna himself. But still the devotee has a desire to see Krishna with his eyes, to hear Krishna's words, to talk with him, and to reciprocate with him as a person. The deity can also reciprocate as a person. So he talks about seeing Krishna within the heart. Prabhupada talks also in the teachings of Lord Kapila, that the yogi is seeing Krishna in the heart and the devotee is seeing Krishna as a deity. Both are equivalent. But he says that above both of these is the level of seeing Krishna directly. So what is that fifth verse of Damodarashtakam where he says, Edhyakshi Drishya. So he's saying, first he says, let this Lord be manifest in my heart. So he says, yes, what is that? Sada? Sada me manasya avirashtam ki manyai. What else do I want? Let this be manifest in my heart. And then he starts describing the form of the Lord in the fifth verse. So when he's describing that, so Sanatana Goswami says that actually, Lord has already manifested in his heart. And he's describing that form. But now, he feels that his Lord is manifested in my heart, but I want to see him right in front of me, in my eyes. And therefore he says, Edhya Akshi Drushya. So that is the devotional longing of the Lord, devotee. Yes, any questions?
Come from Vaikuntha. Like, how to explain to others, like, that kind of concept, Swayambhu Vigraha. There's also the skepticism can be that someone has made and then those kind of things. Also, like, that Vigraha has come from Vaikuntha, how to explain that? It looks like normal, any other material.
See, when we are talking with at a rational or a logical level, or a philosophical level also, it's enough to stick with the philosophy. There's no need to emphasize the point of Swayambhuvada, because that is something which is cannot historically prove it. And ultimately, if a person understands the philosophy of deity worship, then whether the deity is manifested by Pranapratishtha or by Swayambhu, that doesn't matter. And if the person doesn't accept the philosophy of deity worship, then also it doesn't matter. What is that saying? Believers need no reasons, non-believers accept no reasons. So, I think that if we are talking with new people, there's no need to emphasize the Swayambhuva aspect. All it emphasizes the philosophical aspect of how the Lord manifests through matter. So our point is going further that they say that actually, if you say God cannot manifest as matter, you are limiting God. You are saying that God, there is something that God cannot do. And that is a limitation on God's omnipotence. So it is the, so now, but they say that this form of deity is limited, God is unlimited. How can the unlimited manifest as limited? Says, that is the unlimited power of God. The unlimited power of God is that the unlimited can manifest in a limited form. So, actually to say that God cannot manifest as a deity is a minimization of God's power. Not to worship God as a deity. It's the opposite way. But we should focus on the philosophy generally speaking. Any other questions? Yes, Ramana Chandra. Okay.
bona fide testimonies to deities.
When pujaris give accounts of certain stories and pastimes of the deities, generally speaking, apart from the Puranas and the Upapuranas, there is a third genre of Puranas which are called as Sthala Puranas. Sthala Puranas are the books which talk about the glories of a particular place where the deity has manifested. And there are quite a few Sthala Puranas which are referred to by our Acharyas also. So, if something has been referred to by our Acharyas, that's fine. Now, if something has not been referred to by our Acharyas, then we will have to see its consistency with the Siddhanta. And if you are talking about current times, then again we have to use Guru Sadhu Shastra. So, if one person is saying something, we respect that person as a devotee, but what do other Vaishnavas say about it? And then, if other Vaishnavas are also seconding it, then we can accept it. But in general, if we look at Srila Prabhupada's presentation of Krishna consciousness, Srila Prabhupada emphasized that, he said one thing, if the devotees are performing devotional service nicely, the deities will be smiling. That deities, you can look at the state, understand the state of a temple by looking at the deities. That's one thing that Srila Prabhupada said. But beyond that, Srila Prabhupada did not really go into this kind of pastimes with deities. So Srila Prabhupada kept Krishna consciousness very carefully protected from sahajiyaik tendencies. We are not saying that this is sahajiyaik. Somebody saying that the deities are expanding and these are small. We are not saying it is necessarily sahajiyaik. But it can be a possibility. And Srila Prabhupada did not entertain that too much. So, what we should do is, that should not be the focus of our preaching. You know, if some new people are coming and then we are telling the people have the concept of Jagrut deity, you know. As if that deity is Jagrut, then all the other deities are what, sleeping? It's a little strange idea. So people, at least in our preaching of Krishna consciousness, among devotees, it's fine to relish these things. But in our presentation to new people, that should not be the point of focus. Our focus should be our basic philosophy.
Prabhuji, these pastimes which Jannivas Prabhu and other devotees mention about Narasimha Dev and Jagannath. So.
Well, I would say that they are quoted by many other Vaishnavas. You know, practically several other Vaishnavas have quoted it. In the Mayapur management has also published books based on this. So if you say Guru, Sadhu, we have to see what our spiritual master says. And we see what Sadhus say. Now, in principle, it is not wrong that the deity can perform pastimes with the Lord, devotees. Isn't it? In principle, it's possible. And if multiple Vaishnavas are saying the same thing, then there's nothing wrong in accepting it. And in general, I don't think we need to make a big issue out of it. That should not become the focus of our devotion. Then what happens? The whole expectancy changes. Expectancy, then if I have my deity, will my deity also perform pastimes with me? And then some say if some other devotee is there, you know. I mean, this can happen because as brahmacharis we don't have our personal duties. In congregation this can happen even much more. You know, one congregation will say that Lord is performing pastimes with me. My Gaurantai were dancing. And somebody says, well, why is my Gaurantai not dancing? It can relate to a whole unnecessary complexes, you know, superiority complex or inferiority complex, whatever. So Prabhupada kept Krishna consciousness simple. The test of your spiritual advancement is not what dreams you get, what visions you get. It is what service you do. If you are committed to your service to Krishna, you are spiritually advanced. And Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada said that he got the dream of Krishna. But beyond that, if you look at Srila Prabhupada's life, it was his commitment. It was a practical commitment to service. So that is the standard that we should have. I mean, they are exalted devotees and it's entirely possible that these pastimes happened. And because so many Vaishnavas are saying it happened, so we accept that they happened. But that need not be our focus. If you look at the way Prabhupada presented his Krishna consciousness.
Prabhuji, another thing is that many years before this, Lord Ganesha drinking milk. So should we consider it as a scientific or an environmental thing or something really spiritual? And some deities like Narasimha Dev in the south drinking sugar cane juice or jaggery water or some other many deities drink something and give half back. So such things are really phenomenal or scientific?
See, whether Ganesh drinks milk or Narasimhadev drinks milk. See, there are two distinct issues here. There is one is the issue of faith and devotion, and the second is the issue of science and evidence. So, in general, if we try to mix the two, it doesn't work. Because how things work is, people who are skeptical, they will always find some explanation around. And when we base our presentation on empirical grounds, which, if at all they have happened, are non-replicable. Then we are placing ourselves on unsteady grounds. And we are placing ourselves on weak grounds. So if we say that Ganesh drank that milk at that time, or Narasimhadev drinks milk at milk, jaggery water or whatever. Now, is the thing scientifically demonstrable? Is it scientifically repeatable? Has somebody done science? Is a rigorous way of acquiring knowledge. Whether it is true or false, that is a different issue. But it reveals only part of reality. But as soon as we start claiming something as scientific, their science has its own parameters. And it is very difficult to demonstrate any spiritual phenomena in a way that will satisfy scientific criteria. So therefore, getting into the zone, you know, what happened is, Suvatra Maharaj tells the story that in 1972-73, there was this sensational book published called Fingerprints of the God by Graham Hancock. And this book, it's even today very popular, that book talks about how there was an ancient civilization all over the world. And Graham Hancock's theory was that there's a different race from another planet who came here, and they are very advanced, and that's how the earth became advanced. And then there were some cataclysms, and the advancement went away. And then now we have started again. But still, because of that ancient advanced races influence, there are some advanced architecture and artifacts still remaining. So Suvatra Maharaj says, I told this whole thing to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada, what do you say about this? So is this an example of spiritual technology? Prabhupada said, spiritual technology means Guru-Shishya Parampara. Spiritual technology means Guru-Shishya Parampara. In the Guru-Shishya Parampara, we practice the pursuit of bhakti and we experience transformation. Now this is again not to say that we shouldn't go for empirical demonstrations. Now, in the first canto, I think chapter 11 and 12, when chapter 9 is Bhishma Pitama's departure, chapter 10 is Lord Krishna leaving for Dwarka, chapter 11 is Krishna entering Dwarka. So at the end of chapter 10, and Krishna is going through different areas. So there, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada lies that, you know, geologists and scholars may debate about whether the path by which Krishna has gone, is it geographically accurate? But as far as we are concerned, we are satisfied that Krishna has reached Dwarka now. So, the point I am making is that as foundational philosophical concepts are concerned, like existence of God, existence of soul, these are something which we should try to prove scientifically and through logic and evidence. But as far as when we go into the whole zone of miracles, these are all miracles, then it is very difficult to prove miracles. And it is entirely, our philosophy itself is so sound that we don't need miracles to give people faith in our philosophy. And when we emphasize miracles, then we weaken the foundation of our philosophy. Or rather, we weaken our presentation. So, we are not saying that miracles are not possible. Miracles are possible and they have happened. But Srila Prabhupada did not emphasize that. And our philosophy is so strong that we don't have to emphasize that. And there are many people who claim to be God. And their claim to be God is based on their ability to perform miracles. So, there are whole societies, there's the Indian Rationalist Association, which starts showing how the miracles are all false. And then we don't have to defend that the miracles are true. We accept the principle that miracles are possible. But we don't have to go about in the zone of saying that this miracle is true, this miracle is true. So, whether Ganesh drank milk, something extraordinary happened. That much we know. So, David Hume was a famous skeptic. So, he said that there are three questions to ask to know whether some miracle happened or not, whether something was a miracle. First, did something extraordinary happen? Second is, was that something extraordinary supernatural? In the sense that, can it be not explained by natural laws? And third is, whether that supernatural phenomena constitutes a divine intervention. Whether that supernatural phenomena is a hand of God in it. So, skeptics, so these are three distinct criteria. And to try to satisfy each criteria, so Tamal Krishna Maharaj wrote an essay about this Ganesha drinking milk. And he applies this David Hume's three criteria. And then he says that it is inconclusive. You can't say whether it happened or not. So basically, if you go into the zone of empirical proving, skeptics have their own criteria which are very difficult to satisfy. And best not go into that zone. Okay? Yeah. Yes.
So my question about the deities, you told about the pran pratishtit deities, but some deities are self-manifested deities also there.
Yeah.
So is there any difference between both deities, or both worship are the same?
Traditionally, is there any difference between Swayambhu deities and made deities? I think so. Traditionally, Swayambhu deities are considered to be far more exalted. Traditionally, I can check for a reference if you want. But in general, if a deity is directly manifested as a grace of God, then that is considered to be of a higher level of exaltation. But from a practical point of view, Srila Prabhupada did not talk about all these things. There are different kinds of deities. There is Swayambhu deity, then there is Daiva deity, then there is Siddha deity, and then there is Manava deity. There are four kinds of deities. Swayambhu means that Krishna manifests directly. Then Daiva is a god comes to you and gives you a deity. The Devta comes, Shiva comes and gives you a deity of Vishnu. So that happened to Vallabhacharya. Then there is something like Siddha Vigraha. Siddha Vigraha means a great self-realized soul, he gives a deity to you. Now the question is not whether he made the deity or whatever, he gives the deity to you. And the third is that a human being, a human sculptor makes a deity. So among these, the deity Swayambhu is considered the highest. But so this is the traditional classification according to Shilpa Shastra, according to Pancharatra, not Shilpa Shastra, Pancharatra, which talks about deity worship. But Srila Prabhupada did not, this is not in Srila Prabhupada's books. This is the tradition of Pancharatra deity worship. So Srila Prabhupada did not emphasize that. And ultimately, whether the deity is Swayambhuva or Manava Kruta, the important thing is whether we have bhakti. Because ultimately, we can be skeptical towards both forms, if we want to be. And we can be faithful and devoted to both forms also. So traditionally there may be hierarchy, but from our point of view, there need not be any difference. Yes,
Pujay, scriptures are there, so there must be God. And scriptures are words generally. Words are recorded, that is scriptures. And words are the sound. So sound has no form. So generally Muslims, they say, they believe on scriptures and words, but not form. So how to understand that?
See, now first of all, the idea that words have no form, that itself is questionable. See, if you want to see, when you write words, they have a form. When you speak words also, at the ethereal level, some formations are made. The ether moves in particular ways. So the idea that sound doesn't have form itself is questionable. Now, see, the Mayavadis say God is impersonal and formless. The Vaishnavas explain God is personal and having form. Islam is in between. They say God is a person but formless. So it's a strange idea. So they accept Allah is a person but he has no form. But if you see Quranic scriptures, in my book Deity Worship I have written, there are quotes in the Quran which talk about Allah's face, Allah's eyes, Allah's smile, Allah's hands, Allah's legs. And the Quran doesn't say it is metaphorical. The Quran doesn't say that. So now, the idea that Allah doesn't have a form is not actually coming from the Quran. So the point is that if we present the Krishna consciousness philosophy systematically, then Krishna Surya Sama Maya Hai Andhakar. So if we start going into understanding each philosophy to refute it, that takes a long time. And that doesn't work also, because people always come up with counter refutations. But if we present our philosophy coherently, that people will find it answers the fundamental question the most satisfactorily. So, we can discuss about the specific misconception later, because now we are going over time. I wouldn't like to go into that zone right now. But in general, the point that if God is a person, a personality is never diffused. Personality always is associated with a form. And we have a philosophical understanding, which they don't now have, about how a person can have a form and still not be limited. So, that particular idea which they have is because of this philosophical inadequacy. So, rather than trying to refute that idea, try to explain the philosophical inadequacy which created that idea. Because they are wedded to the idea that God cannot be limited. We also agree, God cannot be limited. But God can be unlimited and can still have a form. That is a point if we introduce, then things become much clearer. It's connected.
Two different things are there, that sometimes there are some deities which are like, we don't know how they came about. There is some folk tell that, you know, Krishna and that deity worship started. And second are deities where the worship is established by some impersonalist or like that, and quite famous deity, but the worship is like impersonal, established by impersonal leader or like that. So in such cases, like one thing to be understand that we can obviously be respectful in any case, like, but then how to like understand this thing that we just don't bow down to anything and everything that goes on in the name of, like, you know, here is a temple of Krishna and all, because in towns and all you find many such temples are there, Krishna temples and all, where even deities haven't like the specific features which they should be having as a deity and all like that. So I just want to know that, like, what should be the exact attitude.
So, how should we respond to deities whose origin or status we can't know, or whether they are bona fide or not? In general, our response should be based on lok vichar. Lok vichar means what will be public perception at that place. Because if we are not definite, we might become offensive to call a deity which is actually a deity as not a deity. And we might be gullible or foolish if we worship as a deity that which is not a deity. So therefore, what is most anukul for deity worship? You know, there is this place, Ahobila Narasimha. So when Srila Prabhupada had gone there, now that traditional Sthala Puran Katha over there is that is the place where Lord Narasimhadev appeared. And there is the pillar also over there. Now when Srila Prabhupada was asked, Srila Prabhupada gave a non-committal answer. He says, Ito Narasimha, Parato Narasimha. Did Lord Narasimha appear over here? Prabhupada gave a non-committal answer. So Prabhupada did not offend the people over there, but nor did Prabhupada substantiate. This is the way, this is where Lord Narasimhadev appeared. There are many stories like that. So Prabhupada did not substantiate that necessarily. So therefore, when Radhan Maharaj went for a yatra over there, and we were going to be there, and there was going to be katha over there, and then there people are also going to come and hear. So now Radhan Maharaj said that he told this pastime, he did not, I won't play this as it, but it is said that Lord Narasimhadev appeared over here. And then we went up to the Ugrastamba. People, they wouldn't even risk their life to go up there. And then the very fact that we are going there indicates that we, to some extent, accept that Lord Narasimhadev appeared over there from that stamba. So, which is fine. So, now it could be that a great spiritual master can get some intuition that this is actually the place. But even if it were not the place, then actually that is anyway a sacred place for Lord Narasimhadev. And going there and worshipping is important. So, and we should not hurt the feeling of the people over there. So we should certainly not deny it. But at the same time, we don't have to overemphasize it. Srila Prabhupada took that out. Don't overemphasize it, but don't deny it also. And so basically, using lok vichar, we have to decide that. And we can't. We see our goal is not to. Srila Prabhupada asked this question. There are already so many temples in India. Why do you create your own temples? Why don't you just adopt these temples only? So Srila Prabhupada replied, are you married? You know that story, isn't it? You're surprised. What? What has that got to do with it? He said, yes. Do you have children? He said, yes. Why do you beget children? There are so many orphan children, just adopt them. So he was taken away. What is going on? See, Prabhupada said, like that, you know, there are so many temples. Just as you don't want to adopt orphan children, you ought to have our children. He says, we want to have our own temples. So he just couldn't know what to reply. So, the point is, we have our temples, and our temples are the primary deities which we should worship. And even if we are in a holy place, if we are in Vrindavan, if we are in Pandharpur, then if we are in Mayapur, you know, if we are in ISKCON temple, for us our primary deities are ISKCON deities. And other deities may go occasionally to worship. Even if those deities are more famous from the traditional point of view, for us our primary aradhya should be our deities. And other deities we can just do, if they are respected, we can worship them. And otherwise based on lok vichar. Yes.
Hare Krishna.
Yes.
Puji, there is in Maharashtra one Swadhyaya Parivar is there. You must be knowing about Panduranga Shastri.
I want to know what is the connection of the topic first.
No, about deity worship. We see that he has established deity worship Yogeshwar, and that form of Lord is quite different one. So these people, because they are doing all this, it's like many people become pious and turn towards God consciousness. Only thing is the philosophy is quite different. Whatever he has spoken, he said Narsingh Dev did not appear from pillar, and it was all something like that. So how we are going ahead so that such all pious people can become Krishna conscious?
See, as far as Swadhyaya Parivar is concerned, one thing is that they accept Krishna as God. They also accept Bhagavad Gita. And they have, to a large extent, helped people develop faith in Krishna and Bhagavad Gita. There are some things which are a problem. He allows fish eating, because he says people who live on the coast, they can't eat anything else. And he treats bhakti more in a utilitarian way. Bhakti hi samajik shakti hai. It's a social power. We should use it to transform society. So now, if you see anybody who is not connected with the parampara, in their understanding of scripture, there will always be some deficiency. But rather than focusing on the deficiency, what we need to do is, we can dovetail them, uplift them, as much as is possible. So, by focusing on similarities, and by encouraging people to get a more clearer philosophical understanding, we can help them to come closer to Krishna. So, individually the cases will vary. But rather than adopting a confrontationalist attitude, see how it is, that person is here, we are here. So first we have to build a bridge. So that means that person should have feeling we are also good people, and here also you can practice bhakti, and here you can get good association. Maybe we can tell them that here you can get systematic philosophical understanding. You build a bridge, let the person come across. And then later on, once he has developed faith in Krishna consciousness, then Krishna will bring a situation in his life when he will have to choose between Krishna and his earlier things. But that should come later. You know, it's like after the bridge is built and has crossed over, then break the bridge. So that he can't go back. He comes to Krishna lotus feet. But sometimes that person is there, and then only we break the bridge. Then what happens is he stays there forever. Like I told that story about my friend who had come to a temple and they said these people have gone to hell. Well, that person is now a prominent sannyasi in Ramakrishna Mission. He is one of the main preachers. You know, he could have been an ISKCON devotee, an ISKCON preacher. So, we lost him. And the worst thing is, that person comes halfway and that time you break the bridge. Then what happens is, he just falls down. That person starts thinking, oh, is this right? Is that right? What is right? Better let forget everything else. So, you have to, if somebody is committed to some path and is interested in Krishna consciousness, you have to very carefully bring him.
I just wanted to know, many people, they are not at all committed anywhere.
Yeah, so encourage them.
How can we engage them in doing some services that will be helpful for...
Depending on time, place, circumstance, what service they can do. You can encourage them to chant, encourage them to come to the temple and do some seva, according to time, place, circumstance. In general, sensitivity is very important. Now, there's one devotee who is a very senior congregation counselor in Chowpatty. And he was a sold-out follower of one particular famous spiritual teacher in India. And at that time, that person is also quite good. He's not a controversial person. In his own way, he's good. So somehow at that time, there was some rumor about him that had come in the newspaper. Whether that was true or false, I don't know. But it was a very nasty rumor. Or some sort of immoral thing that happened. So then, so this person was coming to temple. And at that early days, Radhanath Maharaj also knew. Radhanath Maharaj knew practically everybody was coming to temple at that time. And he was quite a sincere person. So Radhanath Maharaj called all the brahmacharis and told them, nobody should talk about this with him. About this particular, you know, sometimes what has happened is somebody is following some path, and then that path's teacher has a problem. You want to drive the point of, see, you are following this wrong path, give it up and follow this path. So Maharaj said, don't speak about this to anyone. And then he came to the temple. When he came to the temple, you know, he was already very sensitive. Like, suppose, you know, if we hear some news of some controversy in ISKCON and then we go for a program, we are afraid whether people will ask some questions about that problem. So he was also in that frame of mind at that time. And he found that in his office, people were making fun of him. But ISKCON, which is like a competitive organization, there nobody spoke anything about it. And that attracted him so much. And then that incident, that's already about his commitment. And then now he has become a pakka devotee. Very, very serious devotee. So, the point is that we have to be very sensitive in these cases. How people can be engaged will vary according to time, place, circumstance.
These people know they have Prabhat Feri and they go to many villages. You know?
Specifics we will talk later, bro, if you don't mind. Okay. Specifics we will, it will vary from time, place to circumstance. Yes. Okay. Last question. I want to just finish the 3 points.
Oh, yeah, this so with respect to deities reciprocation, like even we find like deities are one who is worshipping very nicely, and Vrindavan also, sometimes we find that deity is itself is protecting, like we hear in that Radharaman temple, like some child was put in and the Lord's ear, and next day the child died or some, and similarly at the same time
what
we heard a story like in Radharaman temple, that small child, somebody who came to the deity and put some small stick near the ear and blood came out of it.
Of the deity.
And the next day the child died. And those, and there are certain other circumstances we see that Aurangzeb coming and all those, where the devotee is taking the deity and running and hiding the deity. And the, so how to make, like sometimes whereas we find that Lord is protecting him himself and whereas sometimes the devotees are taking care. So how do we understand this Lord's reciprocation point?
How does the deity act? The deity, like Krishna, is Swarat. And how Krishna will act, we don't know. So similarly, deity can reciprocate in unpredictable ways, entirely. In fact, the unpredictability of Krishna is what makes Krishna consciousness exciting. So in general, the mood of deity worship is that we have invited Krishna as our guest. And we have invited him to offer our service to him. So when the deity is present, the mood is not that the deity will protect us. The mood is that we should protect the deity. Although Krishna is the protector of everyone, especially the mood of deity worship. The mood of deity worship is what? Krishna, we want to serve you, so we have invited your presence over here. So Krishna has manifested as a deity not to prove his omnipotence. Krishna has manifested himself as a deity to give us the opportunity to serve him. And that's why, normally speaking, devotees will be ready to lay down their lives to protect the deity. Because that is the purpose for which the deity is manifested. So Krishna in this world doesn't manifest his omnipotence anywhere. Except as Kala. As time, he destroys everyone. But apart from that, this world has created as a place by Krishna for those who want to forget God and his omnipotence. So Krishna doesn't want to interfere with their plans. Whatever you want to do, you can do. Krishna doesn't want to impose his authority on them. He gives them, according to their karma, a particular time and a particular space to play around. And as Kal, he will intervene in their lives. But in general, Krishna doesn't intervene. So we have to understand, otherwise we may get disturbed how deities can be desecrated. If Krishna deity is Krishna, how can they be desecrated? The point is, Krishna has not manifested himself as a deity to prove his omnipotence. He has manifested to give us the opportunity to do service. Same, like some other religious people may say that, our holy book is sacred. But can that holy book not be torn? Can it not be burned? It can be. Does that make it any less sacred? The holy book has not manifested itself to prove that it is unburnable or it is undissolvable or something like that. The holy book is, the holiness and the power of the holy book is seen by studying it and applying it. Just so every material manifestation of God, whenever God manifests through any matter, material medium, then generally speaking that material manifestation follows the laws of nature. When Krishna manifests as prasad, prasad follows the laws of nature. If it's 10-12 hours kept, it at a material level gets spoiled. So when Krishna manifests in material world, he is not manifest to defy the laws of material nature. He is manifesting to purify us. So therefore, we have to just as we understand this very easily for prasad, we may understand this for Bhagavad Gita also. You know, if I keep the Bhagavad Gita crate in rains, it will get wet and the Bhagavad Gita gets spoiled. We understand this very easily. But somehow, because we see the deity as a form and we treat deity as Krishna himself, so we feel that if something happens to deity, why is Krishna not protecting himself? But in principle, whether it is deity, whether it is prasad or whether it is shastra, they are all manifestations of Krishna as matter which have manifested to give us the opportunity to serve. Now prasad, we serve in a very different way, by chewing and crushing prasad. That is the way we serve prasad. But shastra we serve by reading. Deity we serve by bowing down. The way we serve may vary. But the principle is all the manifestations are there to receive service from us. So we shouldn't expect that the deity should protect himself, or deity should exhibit some miracles. And then if the deity doesn't exhibit miracles, then we think, oh, was Krishna there only or not? Or they are foolish to worship the deity. No, we have to philosophically clearly understand that Krishna has manifested to give those souls who want to serve him the opportunity to serve. And for those souls who want to defy him and to deny him, Krishna says, okay, you can defy and deny me. Krishna, when they try to desecrate the deity, Krishna will simply unmanifest himself the deity. Continue on believing that there is no God here. That's what you want to believe, that's what Krishna will allow them to believe. Now in some exceptional cases, Krishna may manifest himself as the deity also. But those are exceptions. And that maybe there is some special purpose of Krishna or special leela with some devotee involved. See, Krishna can manifest directly through stone also. Tomorrow Narasimha Chaturdashi is there. So what to speak of deity? For a devotee's sake, Krishna can manifest directly through a pillar. But for a demon's sake, Krishna will not manifest even through the deity. The demon challenge, are you there? I don't care whether you think I am there or not. Krishna is like that. You cannot challenge Krishna to appear. You cannot force Krishna to appear like that.
One point into the same related. Like you said that he can manifest for devotees. And sometimes even in like, for example, we hear 10,000 devotees were massacred in Sri Rangam when we heard like that. And so how to understand that point of yours?
See, when 10,000 devotees are massacred, we have similar points in the Mahabharata and Ramayana also. You know, when Jatayu was being killed, could Lord Ram not have appeared? Now we say that Lord Ram was very far away, but if he is God, how is he far away? He is there in Jatayu's heart also. He is in Ravana's heart also. And we see then even Abhimanyu was killed. So the point is, Krishna's protection is not necessarily always manifest at the material level. So sometimes, from a devotee's point of view, if a devotee lays down his life for Krishna's sake, that is glorious. And what does Vyasadeva say to Yudhishthira? You know, he says, after Abhimanyu's departure, Yudhishthira is heartbroken. So Vyasadeva says, in this world, no matter how exalted a person becomes, a temptation can drag that person down from any level. But Abhimanyu is so fortunate that now he has attained a destination that is beyond the reach of temptation. So he sees it in a very positive light. So if some devotee lays down their life, that to become a martyr for Krishna's sake is glorious. But as devotees, it is the responsibility of Kshatriyas to avoid that. And Prabhupada wanted to discount both Brahman and the Kshatriyas. So we have to do the needful to protect. You know, when some deity, some people attract the new Vrindavan, so Prabhupada said, devotees, you can have guns. If they expected police to come and protect. Police didn't come. Police thought these people are cultists. They said, we don't have to protect you, we have to protect others from you. So Prabhupada was very angry. Prabhupada said, if police is not protecting, then you have to protect yourself. You take guns. So, yeah.
But I heard one lecture that he was the son of Soma and he wanted him back. So therefore, he was killed at the age of 16 years. Means whatever age, he was killed early. So which is true?
But the Abhimanyu was the son of Soma?
Soma or other any damning?
Well, I am simply telling you what is there in the Mahabharata. If there are some other stories, they may either refer to some other yugas or there may be some other katha which, how authoritative they are, we'll have to see. Where it is given, we don't know. See, the important point is that if somebody lays down his life for the service of the Lord, he becomes purified. He's purified even if he goes to heaven. Like it is said, when Muchukunda, he sees the Lord, but the Lord doesn't take him immediately back to God. He says, you continue your austerity, then eventually you come back to me. There, isn't it? Muchukunda doesn't immediately get purified, doesn't go back to God. He continues on. So the Lord may have different destinations. Now if you see the prayers of Nalakuvar and Manigri, they are practically pure devotional prayers. Vani gananu kathane shravanam kathayam. Very beautiful prayers. But still after that they go and become demigods again. On the other hand, Gajendra, he goes back to Godhead. So the important thing is not literally where we go in terms of physical, but where we go in terms of the state of consciousness. So if somebody is purified, then he is beyond the reach of temptation. And laying down one's life in the service of God, there can be very few purifications greater than that. Okay? Yeah. Okay.
This is regarding installation of deity. Installation. So in the beginning you told there is a certain process for installation like that. And many time our temples they follow installation. But some other places like a congregation or they just do abhishekam and all and they chant Hare Krishna mantra. They pray to Lord, please manifest. So this is also you can consider as a proper process. So Lord is manifesting that deity?
Yeah. There are different levels. There is deity installation and there is deity welcoming. So deity welcoming is a lower level. That means when there is deity welcoming, the level of commitment to service is flexible. Now even if the deity, even if the... But what that means is even if the grahasthas don't worship the deity every day, if they don't follow very high standards, that is okay. So prana pratishtha, when it is done, it is, as I said, it is a serious commitment to service. And after that, proper offerings have to be done. And now ISKCON's deity worship ministry has made proper rules that for deities to be installed, particularly this number of pujaris have to be there. Because sometimes earlier what happens in temple presence is, yes, we'll manage this much level. We'll do this much service. We'll maintain these standards. But then they said, because the devotees went away or something like that, they were not able to maintain. And then they said, this is offense to the deities. We have called the deities. So now, what they have made a rule is that this now a number of devotees, and not just devotees, this many number of pujaris have to be there. Only when there are this many number of dedicated pujaris, only then deity installation will be allowed. So it's a high level of commitment. Okay. So let's complete these two quick points. Nirguna versus Saguna is something which I discussed earlier about how it refers not to qualities, but to modes. So Srila Prabhupada explains that. And now, the last point in this is, tadantarasya sarvasya, tadu sarvasyasya bahayataha. So he's inside everything, yet he's outside everything. So how is that? There are many ways in which I understand it. One is that, as Paramatma, he's inside everything. As Bhagwan, he's outside everything. So this verse is there, 9.4. And sometimes, yesterday we were discussing about whether there's any verse which talks about Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagwan. This is the nearest verse that you get to it. Although it doesn't mention Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagwan, but it talks about three conceptions. Maya tatamidam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina. By me in my unmanifested form, the whole world is pervaded. This refers to the Brahman aspect. Matsthani sarva bhutani. The whole world is situated in me. That refers to the Paramatma aspect. Paramatma is sustaining the whole world. Na chaham deshu avasthita. I am not situated in this world. That refers to the Bhagwan aspect. So this is like a sutra which talks about all three aspects of the absolute truth. So, of course, Srila Prabhupada in the purport also says that the Virat Rupa is also there. So Krishna is there inside, and Krishna can manifest himself separately as Virat Rupa also. And the Lord is all-pervading. So actually, Brahman is the impersonal aspect of God. Bhagavan is the personal aspect of God. Now, Paramatma aspect is like a transition between personal and impersonal. The Paramatma is personal in the sense that actually it is Vishnu. Actually, he is Vishnu. But at the same time, the Paramatma aspect does not necessarily reciprocate and perform pastimes with people. The Paramatma is neutral. Upadrishta Anumantacho. So, if you have a transition, like if you have the government, the rule of law is there. That is, in one sense, impersonal. That is like the Brahman aspect. Jagata Uvyakta Murtina. Then you have the judge, who is like the representative of the government, who makes sure that the law is implemented. That is like the Paramatma. And the judge has his own life at his home, where his full personality is manifested. That is like Bhagavan. So when we say Krishna is pervading everything, how is he pervading everything? He is pervading as Brahman, he is pervading also as Paramatma. But he is beyond everything as Bhagavan. And he is beyond everything as Bhagavan, that's what it is said in that Ramadi Murti Shukala Aniyame Tishthan Nana Avatar. No, not that verse. Krishna Swayam Sambhava Paramapur. Not that verse. Golo Kevani Vasatya Akhilatna Bhuto. So he is Golo, in residing Golo, but still he is there everywhere also. So Krishna as Bhagavan, generally speaking, devotees don't consider Bhagavan to be all-pervading. Of course, at ultimate level, they are not different aspects. They are only one person only. But if you see 9.5, Krishna says, Nachamat sthani bhutani paschame yoga maishwaram. So he is referring to the Bhagavan aspect. Yes, actually the whole world is not burdening me. I am having my own self-existence where I am blissful. So Krishna as Bhagavan is not all-pervading. He is in his own abode performing his own pastimes. And that is why we have the whole rasa. Where it is said that Gajendra called for Krishna. When Krishna came on Garuda. Now Krishna is in the heart of Gajendra also. He can manifest from there also. But you know the idea that creates the rasa, that Krishna is far away and is coming to the rescue of the devotee. So like that, the point is devotees accept. Like if you see... See, it's a very beautiful thing in the 10th canto. In the 10th canto, the gopis' pastimes come three times. First is 29 to 33 chapter, the Ras Panchadhyaya. And 46, 47 is Uddhav Sandesh. And 83 is the Punarmilan in Kurukshetra. So at 83 is the most fascinating. So there, what happens is, Krishna is telling the gopis that, you know, ultimately this world is moving under the will of providence. And I love all of you so much. And I long to be with you. But by the will of providence, all of us are separated. So the gopis are hearing, not one of the gopis says, Krishna, you are providence. You know, it is your will that is causing our separation. Why? Because the gopis just don't think of Krishna as God. For them, Krishna is Krishna. Krishna is there, just their heartthrob. And they just don't think of Krishna as God. So they, Krishna, we are separated by the will of providence, they accept that. So for them, so similarly, when early in Uddhav Sandesh, Krishna tells, separation from me is impossible because I am all pervading. That's all right. But they ask, when is Krishna coming? So for them, they want to reciprocate pastimes with Krishna as a person. And as one of my friends in Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya asked, he said, you know, you people, don't you have any respect for Krishna? Said, what do you mean? He says, for your guru you have Srila Prabhupada, you have his divine grace. For Krishna, you don't have any honorific. You don't have any Lord Krishna, no Sri Krishna, no Bhagavan Krishna, just Krishna. So, told him that actually, sometimes people feel that, actually this is the direct personal connection with Krishna that Srila Prabhupada has given us. You know, yes, we have the Prabhupada even coined a new term, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to refer to Krishna. But actually, Srila Prabhupada, one of the very disarming features of Srila Prabhupada's presentation of Krishna consciousness is, he did not treat Krishna as some very lofty person up there. You know, when Haigri Prabhu was told to edit PTG, he said, Prabhupada, I have never done anything with a magazine except read it. How can I produce a magazine? He says, Krishna will help you. So Haigri Prabhu said, you know, you know, we had an idea of God somebody up there, but for Prabhupada, Krishna was a real person right here. And you know, he will help you if you try to serve him. So, now if you see, our respect for Krishna is seen in our commitment to Krishna's, following Krishna's instruction, commitment to chanting Krishna's name, commitment to spreading Krishna's message. But Prabhupada gave us that sense of personal connection with Krishna. If you refer to Krishna as Lord Krishna or Sri Krishna, you will find that that emotional connect doesn't happen. You know, Krishna says like this, Lord Krishna says like this. It becomes a little pompous sounding. So, Prabhupada gave us that. You know, there is a very beautiful, I'll conclude with this point now. Such a beautiful definition of Krishna consciousness Prabhupada gives. One devotee asked the Prabhupada, what is Krishna? How do you know what is Krishna consciousness? So Prabhupada says, when you go in front of the deities, if you feel that Krishna is asking you, what are you doing for me? Then you are Krishna conscious. You don't know, you will not find such a definition with any acharya. So, Prabhupada had that zeal with him. You know, Krishna is God and he has a mission and we have to fulfill his mission. And Krishna, Prabhupada didn't say, you should constantly remember Krishna, constantly chant Krishna's name. He may have given that also at other times. But what he said, if you feel Krishna is asking me, what are you doing for me? Then you are Krishna conscious. So this is the personal connection with Krishna that Srila Prabhupada has given us. Thank you very much. Sri Ishopanishad ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki Gaur Bhaktavinda ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanandai. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.